Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 47 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. And oh boy, today we're talking about warning signs for dangerous partners, and there's a boatload of them out there. But before we hop on to that, just know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please go over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com and learn more. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate this podcast and review us. Because guess what? I read those suckers. That's right. I read all that feedback. It's all good. Can't wait to hear. All right. It's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind. Her body. Her life.
It's all about Her.
Uh-oh. Red alert. Warning signs for dangerous partners. The heck is all that about? We have our go-to expert on all things dangerous partners. Why, it's Dr. Judy Ho, commonly referred to as Dr. Judy, who is a tenured professor at Pepperdine University in California. Now, she's a licensed and board-certified clinical and forensic. Ooh, I already think about that channel ID, all about investigation, discovery, wives with knives. Oh, no. Board-certified clinical and forensic psychologist, a board-certified forensic mental health evaluator, and a tenured professor of psychology at Pepperdine University. She's appeared as an expert psychologist and host on a boatload of news, crime, talk shows, and reality television programs, and is a recurring expert and panelist on Dr. Drew, for instance. It Takes a Killer on Investigation Discovery. See, I told you she was on that channel. And various CNN, Fox, CBS, oh gosh, all kinds of programming out there. And guess what? We're lucky because she's on with us to help us understand what these warning signs for dangerous partners is all about. Dr. Judy, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thank you, Dr. Peek. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Oh, red flags, red flags. Raise your hand out there in Her Podcast land if you've just sort of blew off red flags as you started into any relationship. You're like, whatever, you know, he'll probably outgrow that little thing that he has with knives and guns and whatever. Mm. All right. So what's with the red flags and the fact that women get involved in this fantasy world and just miss the red flags completely?
Well, that is such a good question, Dr. Peek. And I think, first of all, many of us are positive individuals. We want to see the best in people. So I think that that can be a very tough thing to contend with, especially in the early phases of a relationship where you're in the honeymoon and you're just hoping for the best in your partner. You really want it to work out. But I think that there is a second and more dangerous reason for why sometimes individuals find themselves in eventually abusive relationships, and that is that they unknowingly are repeating patterns from their history or from their family history, and it's familiar to them. And so they don't really heed the warning signs because, sadly, when something is that familiar, you kind of think that that's just the way it goes. And so you continue to be involved in a relationship because you think that that is the reality of most relationships. And dangerous partners have a way of enticing you in various ways to make you think that they're actually very committed to you, and that can be a big draw for people.
Interesting. Do red flags when they happen in a relationship, do they feel wrong at the time on the part of the person who is scoping them out? Is there some kind of an intuition like that ain't right?
Yeah, you know, in post, I always talk to people who say, you know what, this started on this day and I could tell at that day I had a bad feeling, but then I try to talk myself out of it. So I think that that is a really early sign where you're trying to justify the behavior of that person, and eventually you explain it away and you ignore it. But there is that justification process that happens very early, where maybe there's that intuition something's not right, but then you tell yourself and you explain it in such a way to make it acceptable. And oftentimes in this phase, the individual's not really telling their friends or family members about it, because they kind of know that they're actually tucking something away that maybe their family or friends may look at it and see it in a completely different way.
And if we're needy, we tend to really, you know, shove these things under the carpet because we really need this relationship for some reason, right?
Absolutely. I think when there is this very, very intense need of wanting to be loved and wanting to be cared for, which of course all of us have to some extent, but in various times in our lives, we may have them more strongly than other times. During those times where you really need that relationship, you're really invested in that relationship working out, you're much more likely to ignore the warning signs.
Oh, yeah. And then we got the fantasy thing. And that is a lot of dysfunctional relationships, you know, often start really intensely from the very beginning, and the attraction is instantaneous and extreme, and you know, our partner feels like, or at least pretends to be, our soulmate, and it feels so good. You know, whenever I read about something like that, Dr. Judy, I say to myself, you know, this is why one of my credos with relationships in general is, would you please just take it slowly, right? Because time tells all, right?
Absolutely. And I think that sometimes people, they make the mistake of thinking all of that early intensity is a sign that this is the love of their life, or this is something really special. They equate that with the ability of this person to love continuously. And that's just not true. When you have such volatility at the early phase of the relationship, that is actually a huge warning sign. So somebody who says, I love you too quickly, for example, or after only knowing you for a couple of days, wants to see you every single day for 10 days in a row. While that might sound romantic at first to individuals, it's also often a warning sign that there's some instability in that potential partner.
Yeah. And then let's go to the abusive place. Now, it's an interesting thing that I remember one of my patients was telling me she was involved with someone who, you know, was involved with military. And that one of the things that happens is that a lot of guys, and I guess gals too, but, you know, guys are really into control, and really the controlling relationship, I think, is one of the biggest, you know, red alerts. And that there's, for a lot of women, I think, that there's this officer and a gentleman kind of thing that goes on, where they feel really protected and, you know, someone's going to always be there for them. But then it kind of morphs into this, I'm going to control your every breath while we're at it. Tell us a little bit more about that controlling thing.
Yes, that's a really good point, Dr. Peek. So this idea of extreme possessiveness and jealousy. And in the beginning, it, as you mentioned, can start off sort of almost like chivalry, where they're protecting you. They just want you to stay out of harm's way. It's for your own benefit. And I think many women can actually feel very cherished by that. This person cares so much about me. They just want to make sure that, you know, I'm always being taken care of one way or another. And that's why they want to know where I'm at every time. And eventually, as you mentioned, it's a gradual process where it becomes more and more limiting. And usually you see it starting with things like the way the person is dressing, making comments about that, starting to isolate the individual from their other friends, or limiting their exposure to other friends, limiting their radius of travel, limiting their level of activity with other people, especially when the partner is unable to be there. And also jealousy that seems to come out of nowhere. So even though it's a friend that you've had for 15, 20 years, this partner is very worried that somehow you're going to run off with them. And now that's why you can't talk to them ever again. You know, this stuff doesn't happen overnight. It happens gradually. And I think in the beginning, it feels very chivalrous, and it actually can make the women feel quite cherished.
Exactly. And that's how I think it happens. I think, you know, a lot of women today And you know, I'm trying not to be too generic here and overgeneralize, but I think a lot of women just, you know, it feels good to be cherished. It feels good to be, you know, wanted and, you know, and to have someone around to kind of, you know, as it were, protect you. I mean, when I say that, I have to say that with huge, you know, quotes around it, because, you know, we're perfectly, you know, capable of taking care of ourselves. But it's also nice to have someone around who's got your back, you know, in certain respects, and nothing wrong with that. I think that there's a line that some people go over, and you just pointed it out so well. And then suddenly you start going into the abusive thing. You know, as a psychologist, when you've looked at relationships, you know, clearly when someone first meets someone, they are in that dopamine, you know, haze of, you know, I'm so in love and all the rest of it. And you are blinded from a lot. And, you know, red alerts are going on right and left, and you can't see anything to save your life unless you're really looking for them. When you actually see someone eventually evolve into a much more abusive person, when does that happen? Is that within what period of time after you've actually met someone when they really start to kind of, for all intents and purposes, verbally abuse you? I think verbal abuse is much more common than physical abuse. And so when does that really start creeping in?
That's a great question. And in the patients I've worked with, and also just even people that I've known in my personal life who have been in abusive relationships, I really see that a breaking point for many individuals is about the 6 month mark. And it's because in the first 6 months, as you mentioned, Dr. Peak, there's so much courtship still going on. They're still testing the waters, and also abusive individuals, they are actively trying to ensure your commitment to them before they really show their true colors. And so in the first few months, it can feel like a whirlwind romance. There is some of that protectiveness in the beginning, which again is, you know, oftentimes, sometimes the person is just protective, but as it gradually continues, it can become a lot more restrictive. So in the beginning, it feels protective. It feels nice. Somebody wants to take care of me. And so the first few months can feel wonderful. And this person wants to be with you all the time, and really seemingly you're their top priority. And so over the first few months, you don't see as many of those signs. But after 6 months, when there is an explicit commitment on both sides to this relationship being the one for them, that's when you start to see more of the verbal abuse starting to creep in. And the verbal abuse doesn't creep in usually with them starting to scream obscenities at the partner. What usually first happens is sort of a very light demeaning of the individual, you know, putting them down slightly, telling them that they didn't like the way they acted in a certain situation or at a social event, gradually chipping away at the individual's sense of self-esteem and self-efficacy, their ability to actually operate on their own. And that's how it really first starts, because it keeps that individual thinking, wow, I don't know where I would be without this person to tell me what to do. And obviously, I'm not good enough to go and get anybody else. That's sort of where those seeds are first planted.
Interesting. And so I also hear a lot of women settle. They just settle for that individual because in their mind, they feel that they're not worthy of ever finding anyone else. And you hear that in a boatload of relationships, right?
Absolutely. And I think over time, especially if a woman, as they have had other failures in relationships and that it didn't work out, they've had multiple breakups, they do start to question, you know, who am I as a person? Will I be a worthwhile partner to someone someday? And so this individual who at first seemed to pay so much attention to them and adored everything that they were, over time starts to note some of their inadequacies. That actually adds to their sense of, maybe I'm not good enough for anyone else. You know, I'm lucky to even have this person. So I definitely should stay in this relationship and try to make it work. And I've already invested this much time. You know, there's sort of this sense of continued investment because you've already committed yourself. So, well, if I leave this relationship now, it's like the last 6 months was a waste, or the last year or 2 years was a waste. And I think that's what, you know, women sometimes lose sight of, is that it's never a waste. You need to get out and really cut your losses, but that's just not sort of where their mind is at during that time.
Interesting. And, you know, I think it's just really important, you know, for women also to realize that they, many times you don't want to know the truth. You overlook it deliberately because, quite frankly, it's just something you want that relationship for whatever reason. You need that relationship for whatever reason that bad. And so you just sort of delude yourself and say it's a heck of a lot better than it is, and then unfortunately suffer the consequences. So, you know, let's just say a woman has had her big wake-up call that she did end up in an abusive relationship and somehow was able to get out of it and move on with her life. But now she doesn't trust herself. She's like, oh my gosh, you know, like I just keep doing this. How do you as a psychologist help a woman start to begin to trust herself and her own intuition when she gets involved, you know, with yet another person?
That's right. You know, that's an excellent question that many of my patients have asked, you know, what do I do now? I don't trust myself. I thought my intuition was right and I was wrong. And I usually try to assure them that their skill sets are probably still there, but that they just need a little bit more time to implement them as effectively as possible. And so, as you mentioned earlier, really taking relationships slowly is a big part of that, because then it gives you time to process what happened instead of just get swept up in the whirlwind of courtship. And so after going out with somebody on a date, you know, wait a day or two, think a little bit about what happened, how you feel about it, before you commit to going out again and spending three nights in a row with that person, for example. You know, just take your time with the courtship, let yourself have some time alone and with your friends to process every step of it. And that will allow them to start honing their intuitive skills again about, was that right? Was that wrong? Am I overjustifying? I also think that it's a warning sign, and women know that they're starting to delude themselves in a relationship when they only talk to their family or loved ones about a specific part of the relationship. So they're omitting certain things because they know that if they express those things to their family and loved ones, that they might say, hey, that doesn't sound quite right. What did you do about that? Or I don't think I like the way this guy sounds. And so I think when you start to omit information from your friends, that's a big warning sign too. And so to be able to trust yourself better, I think you need to be able to be honest with your friends and your family about what's going on in the courtship and the relationship, and also rely on them to help you make better decisions and to help hone your judgment.
I love that. It's like delegating, you know, some of that responsibility to kind of your A-team. And if you don't trust yourself, then, you know, surely someone out there, you know, who knows you really well, maybe one of your BFFs or more than one, can kind of give you a little bit of feedback. And even though if it's tough, it's tough, right? Now, what if you're already in a dangerous relationship, basically, an abusive relationship for whatever reason? What's a safe way to get out of it?
That's a really good question. I think people sometimes feel very overwhelmed, like, well, this is how I'm stuck here. And if I try to do anything about it, the person's going to come after me. And, you know, some of these are very real concerns, especially if the person has shown a propensity for violence. And so I think a huge part of this is that you have to plan ahead. So as you see the abuse starting to escalate more, as you start to see that the person is starting to lose it more in a verbal argument or even starting to become physical, the first thing to do is to make a list of safe people that you can contact. So make a list of any domestic violence programs. There's actually a number of hotlines that you can call to start you on the process. Friends, relatives, possible attorneys, other important persons and services. Have these numbers handy and be ready at any time to exit physically if needed. So I often tell individuals, this is going to take a few weeks for you to kind of really get ready for this, but start making this list and then pack a small bag of essentials, including any medications or anything that you know you need daily. Obtain and secure your personal documents, you know, just have everything, all the documentation ready so that if you do need to leave physically, you're actually able to, and you know exactly who you need to call in a time of crisis instead of having to make that plan as you're trying to exit. So it does take a little bit of time to develop what I call this personalized safety plan, you know, where you really have to kind of have these steps to exit the relationship slowly, knowing where to go when you leave, and then having to disconnect from your phone and any other possible way that this person can contact you, because then they might try to talk you back into the relationship. And so it's a process. It takes a few weeks to plan and a few weeks for the individual to really get to a point where they say, I am ready to leave this relationship for good, and I'm ready to cut off that contact.
Interesting. You know, as a psychologist, how many people who are kind of, you know, abusive and all the rest of it are really can ever change? You know what I mean? Like if they say, Oh my gosh, let's do couples therapy, or I'll go see a therapist because of my over-controlling whatever and back and forth. I mean, honestly, you know, you're the expert. What percentage of these people actually can ever really change?
Very good question. And while, of course, I hugely believe in change, I think as far as abuse goes, there's a couple of complicating factors. One is that it's typically sort of a transgenerational cycle of abuse, meaning that a person who is abusive oftentimes came from an abusive home, and it's sort of what they learned from a very young age. And so it can become very difficult to disengage from these behaviors that you witnessed in other adults when you were growing up, and also were in your own cycle of relationships before even this current one. So there's a lot of work that's involved, and I think the missing piece is often the person's own motivation. So individuals who are abusive will feel sorry. Oftentimes they're truly sorry. They apologize, but then they do it again because in times of crisis, they really have no other problem-solving skills, and so they default to what they know. And so it really takes a person who is very aware and actually has a huge impetus and motivation to change, because it's hard work to undo the behavioral patterns that you've had for the majority of your life. It takes a long time. And typically, to undo that cycle of abuse, the person who wants to get help really should not be in a relationship at that time, because there's just too much danger in engaging in the same types of risks that you've been doing this entire time in the relationship. People do develop patterns of how to communicate with their partners over time. They're bad habits. And just like that, abuse is like a bad habit. And so when you get into a fight with your partner, you're much more likely to engage in those same patterns that lead to abuse. And so it really takes so much commitment on the abuser's part, because they have to say, yes, this is what I want. I'm willing to go to therapy and learn techniques, but also I'm willing to basically be alone for a while I'm working on this for myself. And that is where the motivation is hard, because these individuals will say, well, I'm only working on it for my partner. And so if my partner is not going to be with me, then why should I work on it? And that's why we see such low rates of success with abusers.
Interesting. Well, you know, it's kind of scary. I mean, you've been on all these programs. You're a forensic psychologist. My question to you is something that's probably on the back of the mind of so many of our listeners and on the Her podcast, and that is, how many of these relationships go to a really ugly place of violence and even death? I mean, like, what percentage of all these people who, you know, really have become abusive, really take it all the way?
Well, it's a really sad thing in terms of, you know, being so dysregulated to the point that it actually involves accidental death of your partner. And I think for a lot of these individuals, when we're talking about sort of this sort of crime of passion sort of abusive cycle, it's accidental in that it just, they could lose control, and they were probably really angry and did want to hurt the person physically, but then ended up accidentally killing them. And the good news is, of course, that the percentage is still quite small overall. It's less than 0.5% of all abuse cases that actually end in death. However, it's about 20% of individuals in domestic violence relationships that, where they end up in serious bodily injury that requires treatment, that requires them to go to the hospital, to get an evaluation, to get treated for their wounds. And that is probably a gross underestimate of the prevalence, Dr. Peak, because a lot of these individuals in abusive relationships never report to the police. They're afraid to go to the hospital either because they don't want their partners to get arrested or because their partners are threatening that if they go, then they will hurt them even more. And so I think that we probably see an underestimate of that.
Wow. You know, I completely agree. After having spent years and years in medicine and certainly in critical care, talking to a lot of these women, and it's scary because some of them, you know, came in very badly injured, and then some of them came in DOA, you know. When they didn't listen, they didn't leave that place where the abuse was taking place. And there's all this stuff going on emotionally, right, that you and I have just, you know, discussed, this need, this blindness to reality, yes, the delusions and back and forth. You know, a lot of it is just sitting down and just telling your true truth and really, yep, having, you know, some steadfast rules. That is, rules that are fairly straightforward. Can you communicate? Do you show mutual respect and honor toward one another and your needs? You know, is there authenticity and transparency? I think a lot of people, to your point, never had that at all. And so they don't even know what that means. They're just repeating patterns of old through family and other relationships. And now you got yourself a nightmare. So the good news is there's hope. And if I can summarize what you said, you know, hey, get out of that relationship, plan, prepare, you know, get ready to rock and roll and, you know, get that freedom back again. And then get help yourself if you're really having issues, because that's really, really important. And at the same time, you know, get together an A-team of people who can help you think it through as you begin to integrate a new person into your life whenever that relationship pokes up. You know, this has just been real eye-opening and incredibly educational and informative. And I know that women out there in Her Podcast Land have been taking notes right and left. Dr. Judy, can you give us one last, you know, thought of wisdom to share with our Her Podcast listeners out there about this whole issue of red alert, warning signs for dangerous partners?
Absolutely. I think one common mistake that many women make and it prevents them from getting out of their relationships when they know it's a bad one, is equating this idea of their abuser and this idea of love. So, well, he loves me so much and I don't want to leave him because I know that he loves me so much. And that's absolutely true, but that love is not going to stop that cycle of abuse. And oftentimes they just can't help themselves. And so feeling safe with a partner of abuse in those times where they're dysregulated, they cannot control their temper and what they do. And so letting go of that idea and understanding that they can love you so much and abuse you to the point of really hurting you, and respecting yourself enough to know that you deserve better. And I think the last resource I will give is, if they have any questions about this or just want to talk to somebody on the phone about it, the National Domestic Violence Hotline is a great resource, and they can look that number up easily on the website, and also the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, NCADV.org. There's some really great information on there about making a safety plan.
Oh, fantastic. You know, this has just been wild. I've been taking notes furiously. I don't know about you out there in Her Podcast Land, but this has just been an eye-opener and such important news. Well, so I want to thank you, Dr. Judy. We've been talking to Dr. Judy Ho, and please run on over to her website, Dr. Judy Ho, and that's ho.com, to learn more about her wonderful work and her stellar background and her contributions to this field as a clinical and forensic psychologist. Dr. Ho, thank you so much for being on the Her Podcast. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Hey, everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And just take a little moment now and rate this podcast on iTunes, because we want to attract a lot of people just like you. And also leave a review, because I read these things. Love it. I'm Dr. Pam Peake. Follow me on Twitter at Pam Peak MD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.